Welcome to Council Tapes, an interview feature of the American Association of Christian Counselors. Today our topic is divorce recovery, and our guest is author, psychologist, and special seminar host, Dr. Tom Whiteman. Dr. Whiteman is president of Fresh Start Ministries, reaching out to offer help and healing to those who have gone through a divorce. Now, here is our host, Dr. Tim Clinton, Executive Vice President of the American Association of Christian Counselors.
As we've come through the 70s and 80s, divorce has reached epidemic proportions. Although it seems to have leveled off or maybe declined some, I think everybody still say divorce is an epidemic. It's interesting. We used to have very strong positions about divorce back a number of years, but now, because it's so rampant and it virtually has touched every family in this country, A lot of variants now exist out there, and people don't know how to deal with this whole issue of divorce. Well, we want to take a unique look at divorce in this particular interview. We're going to look at divorce recovery and talk with a psychologist and a person who has come through a divorce and has a special ministry to those who have been divorced. Now, I know, again, there's a lot of debate and a lot of issue here, and obviously, and there's no doubt, a lot of pain for the individuals who've come through, for the kids, for family members, for friends, all the way to pastors leading congregations. And I hope that through this interview you'll find it very informative and a unique way of looking at those persons who have walked through the pain of divorce and are trying to make it day by day. Join with me now as we go to our interview with Dr. Tom Whiteman. Tom, why don't you tell us, as we get started, how you got involved in the whole issue of a divorce recovery ministry?
Well, Tim, I got into divorce recovery the hard way. About 15 years ago, I went through a divorce. I was in Christian ministry, and I had gone through 4 years of Bible college, and while I was in Bible college, I married my high school sweetheart, and we both were committed to serving God together. And we were working in a church in this area when my wife came to me one day and said, it's actually a long period of time, but I'll give you this condensed version. The bottom line was, I don't love you anymore. I'm not sure if I've ever loved you. And in fact, I found someone else, and I'm going to be leaving. Mm-hmm. Well, for me, you might as well have taken a 2x4 and just hit me right in the face. I had no idea. If you'd asked me 10 minutes earlier, I would have told you I was happily married. Now, of course, for all the counselors listening, they're saying, well, there was probably issues he was denying, et cetera, et cetera. And mm-hmm. they'd be right, but the fact is, at that time, I had no idea.
Okay.
I was completely oblivious. And so immediately, you know, I went into denial, which everybody knows is the first stage, which was, oh, this can't be happening. This doesn't happen to good Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And see, my belief system was, this only happens to people who don't follow the Lord. This happens to people who have bad priorities and they're not having their daily devotions. But I went through my checklist. As a Christian minister, I'm thinking, okay, we're going to church every Sunday and we pray and we have our devotions and I feel like I'm walking with the Lord. So this can't be happening. She must have just had a bad day. And I assumed that God was going to somehow save the situation. You know, I had a belief that as long as you put God first in your marriage, you know, everything, yes, you will go through hard times, but you always will be able to overcome it.
Mm.
And in fact, as I went and talked to my pastor and eventually went and talked to a Christian counselor, the advice that I got was, well, Tom, you just do what's right before God and God will bless you and your wife will come back. Well, in fact, my wife didn't come back. She left. She left with someone else, and she said she wasn't coming back and eventually divorced me. So I was left with, you know, the aftermath of, now what do I do?
Mm.
And condemnation from a lot of Christians who said, well, you must have done something to her, or there must have been something that you did. You probably had bad priorities, or you weren't putting God first in your marriage. And a lot of judgment in terms of, well, there must be more to the story. So then, you know, in the absence of information, people made up their own stories about what must have happened in our life. And so, as you can imagine, I went through a period of time where I thought, well, if this is Christianity, I don't want to have any parts of it.
Mm.
And just kind of, I think I went through about a year to 2 years of just spiritual desert, just thinking, how could God let this happen to me? I was angry with the church. I was angry with my ex-spouse. And I was mad at God. I was mad at God because I felt like I kept my end of the bargain. My bargain with God was, you know, I went to Bible college, I was serving you, and this is the way you treat me. So the two people that I trust most in this world are my wife and God. And both of those, I felt betrayed by both. Fortunately, that's not the end of the story. But having gone through that, I began to question my faith. I began to question my upbringing, my church, the hypocrisy of the church, et cetera, et cetera. And it led to a point where it turned my whole life upside down and changed me completely.
Yeah, Tom, we're seeing a lot of that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, as we go along, I'll talk about the fact that I really enjoy dealing with divorced people, because when they come into your office, so many times, you know, you'll hear about a husband who wouldn't listen to his wife year after year after year. She was saying, we're in trouble. Finally, she walks out, and suddenly he comes in the office and says, hey, maybe I was in trouble, you know. For the first time, they're beginning to evaluate honestly what was going on in their marriage. And I have to say that I did a lot of soul searching. And also I found that, you know, the church should be a place of healing. The church should be a place of comfort. And yet what I saw so many times, and again, I'm talking 15 years ago, Christian counseling and the church in many places were just not equipped to deal with divorced people. And so since they didn't know what to do, they said nothing, and their silence was interpreted as rejection.
Yeah.
I went to a Christian counselor at that time, and the Christian counselor basically said, you're the head of the house. It must be your fault, because if you had been the spiritual leader you should have been, your wife would not have left.
Ouch.
And those words were like, you know, it's like, not only had I been stabbed in the back, I mean, this is how I feel. I felt stabbed in the back by my wife. God has let me down, and now I have a Christian counselor telling me it was all my fault. So I walked away from that thinking, if that's what Christianity is all about, I don't want to have any parts of it. Getting into the divorce recovery ministry was part of my recovery. Going through 2 years of just soul searching, I finally ended up going back to a church who I thought, well, they must not believe much of anything, because I heard that they had a divorce recovery ministry at this church. And I didn't know what I believed at the time. I was like really searching for answers. And I just assume any church that ministered to divorced people must be pretty loose.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went, I was surprised at the fact that they studied the Word of God, they believed in the Bible, they believed in Christ, and yet they had a ministry to people whose lives were broken. And that really impressed me. I hadn't seen that, just the acceptance of the fact that, you know, we're not here to judge you, but we understand you've been through a hard time, and we'd like to help you rebuild your life. And so 2 years after my divorce was the first time I really began to deal with the issues and began to heal from the pain of the divorce. Having come out of that and being involved in that ministry for about 5 years, I was a youth pastor, by the way, and I always said, you know, I always wanted to work in youth ministry, and God took that away from me. I can no longer be in ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to school to become a guidance counselor, because I thought, well, what's the next best thing to being a youth pastor? I thought, well, I could be a guidance counselor. So I went back to school and got a degree in counseling, which led to my a degree of PhD in psychology, but also an involvement in a divorce recovery ministry in my church, which, again, to make a long story short, over the past 8 years I've been working in the Fresh Start ministry, and for the past 4 have been the president of Fresh Start, and we go around the country doing seminars in churches who open their door and say, hey, we'd like to minister to divorced people, can you help us do that? And so that's, I mean, you know, the verse about, you know, whatever's been taken away from you, God will restore tenfold. I just see how God has restored my life at a point when I thought, I will never be in ministry again. I was told, you are washed up for God. You will never be used again because you're divorced. And what God has given me, having gone through that experience, is a ministry far beyond anything I ever imagined. And so I just praise him for that.
Wow, what a power-packed introduction. That's going to obviously lay an incredible foundation for what we're going to talk about. Let's go back a minute then, Tom. As a Christian counselor committed to Christ, biblical in orientation, we try to keep marriages together.
Right.
And our primary goal, when that couple comes to the door or an individual spouse comes in and they're having problems in their marriage, we make it a primary emphasis to work towards reconciliation.
Right.
We hear those words time and time again. What God hath joined together, let not man separate.
Right.
Now, let me ask you a key question. If we try to do that, how do you balance your work in divorce recovery with the desire to see marriages preserved?
Well, I work as a Christian counselor. I have a Christian counseling center in the Paoli area, and I would say that we are absolutely committed to keeping marriages together. I once heard the analogy of, most churches are like the guy on the road. Let's say the bridge has been washed out, and it's a dark, foggy night, and cars are headed toward this bridge that has been washed out. You have seen all of this, and you see these cars coming. If they don't stop, they're going to go off the cliff. Most pastors take the role, and I think as Christian counselors, we take the role of standing in the middle of the road, waving our arms frantically, trying to stop the cars who are headed for this precipice.
Oh, yeah.
And yet there's also cars who have already gone off the cliff, and as you look down the cliff, you see people who are drowning and trying to get out of their cars. And so the question is, do you stand there and wave down the cars that are coming, or do you rush down the cliff and jump in the water and try to rescue the people? Well, the truth is we need both. I think the church needs both. The church needs pastors who will stand up on Sunday morning and stand for Christian marriages. We need counselors who will be waving down the cars saying, you guys are headed for a cliff, and if you don't stop, you're going to go off the cliff. On the other hand, who is there out there who's going to jump in the water with the people who are drowning and say, hey, I'm here to help you? And I think we need both, and the Fresh Start Ministry never wants to negate the people who are trying to head off the divorces. But for the divorces that have happened, I think we're best prepared because we've been through it. It doesn't mean that we're soft on divorce. In fact, the verse, God hates divorce, no one knows that verse better than people who've been through it. Yeah. I hate divorce. Mm-hmm. I've seen what it does to people's lives. I saw what it did to my life. And so we hate divorce, and yet we also realize that people whose lives have been destroyed, basically have gone off the cliff, somebody in the Christian church needs to be willing to come alongside of those people and say, I want to help you through this, and you can become whole, you can become complete, and God is not done with you. God can still use you, and we see that, obviously, through the Fresh Start Ministry. We see that over and over and over again, where people are being used by God, even though they've been through a divorce.
I don't want to stay on the downside of this, Tom, but you and I have talked about this. Let me throw this question out for our listeners. How do you respond to criticism that by helping divorced people, you're actually making it easier for people to get a divorce?
Yeah, that's, I get mail every once in a while. Not as much anymore. I think 15 years ago is a lot worse. But today, I still get mail from people saying, you're doing the work of the devil because, these people have made their bed, now let them lie in it. Basically, they've made mistakes. They deserve to suffer.
Ooh.
And, I tell, it's the same as, to me, is I don't believe in child abuse, and yet child abuse happens. And as Christians, do we say, well, we're not going to help people who have, abused their child or children who have been abused? I mean, these people are victims. And so even though I don't believe in it, it still happens. Divorce happens. And as a church, what are we going to do? Divorce is always the result of sin. But in my mind, even though the consequences are worse, the sin of divorce is no different than any other sin we commit. Yes, the consequences are worse. I want to make that clear because some people say, yeah, but it is worse in terms of the effect on the kids and the effect on the community and what's it doing to our society. I agree wholeheartedly. But if somebody doesn't come along, I mean, look at myself. I mean, my life was destroyed, and I could still be there. I could still be wallowing in self-pity, mad at God 15 years later if somebody hadn't had a ministry to come alongside of me and say, Tom, your life is not over. God is not done with you. And I just praise God that there were people like that who came alongside of me. Now, as a Christian counselor, I never recommend divorce. I always try to keep people together. But to be honest, Tim, there are times when I've worked with couples for month after month after month, and despite all of my efforts and all of my prayers, they have come to me and say, well, we're getting divorced. I never okay that or put a blessing on that, but I know that it's going to happen. And usually, if I've established a good relationship, at least one person in that divorcing party will come back. If it's perhaps the wife is being left or the husband is being left, many times what I call the passive agent, the one who didn't want the divorce, they will continue in counseling in order just to seek help and support as they try to rebuild their life.
And that is so critical. That's where it usually comes in, the whole issue of we're shooting our own wounded.
Right.
Do we shoot our own wounded? Well, let's get a little proactive on the topic now. Let's transition to the issue of Fresh Start and what you guys try to accomplish via your work in ministry.
Okay.
What are some of the key components of how you try to help these people post-divorce? The assumption here is that they've tried reconciliation, etc.
Right.
The couple made the decision, not via the counsel. The couple just went out, they left, they're divorced. Now that person, like you, is out there and they're looking for help.
Yeah.
Where to from there?
Many of the people who come, it's already a couple of years after their divorce, but more and more we've had people coming to the seminar who are still separated. Because of that, we've changed our format somewhat so that we start off just talking about the emotional stages of grieving. We feel it's real important that they just understand the emotions they're going through. So in other words, I'm really angry. I've never been this angry. And we say, well, that's normal. You know, that's part of going through this. It's normal to be mad at God. It's normal to be mad at the world. And so we talk about these stages of grieving just to kind of validate their feelings. And as counselors, I think there's a real need to, first of all, you're not condoning what they're doing, perhaps, but you are saying, yes, I understand how you feel, and obviously we do that as counselors. But then we divide them up into tracks. For those people who are still separated, or people who are already divorced, but there is a hope for reconciliation. Perhaps they were the active agent, and they, you know, maybe they were alcoholic, or maybe they were abusive, and their spouse left, and now they're coming back saying, you know, I want to be different. We have one course for those people who are separated or who could still be reconciled, just teaching them reconciliation techniques. We try to be realistic by saying, you know, you may try everything and the person may still say, drop dead. But you need to be able to stand before God and say, I did all I could. So for those people, we have a course on separation reconciliation struggle. And we talk about the need for reconciliation and give them tools for conflict resolution, better communication styles, and we basically teach them methods for being reconciled. For those people where the divorce is done, their spouse is gone, there's no hope for reconciliation, in many cases their former spouse is even remarried, then we talk about moving on with your life. We talk about the fact that God is not done with you. God can still use you. And some of the key elements is the need for forgiveness, the need for healing, the need to, if we have kids, we've got to focus on lessening the impact for my kids, working through the stages of grieving, getting over this. We try to give them a time frame in which, you know, like, it's going to take you a couple years to heal. Take your time. We talk about not getting involved in new relationships. We talk about not bargaining. In other words, well, God, if you just find me another husband or you find me another wife, then I promise I'll do this. And that's part of the stages, you know, people just bargain with God. Or they try to fill the void. This person's been ripped out of my life. I know for me, when my wife left, I felt like part of me was missing. I actually felt like I was walking around with a big hole in my chest. And because of that hole in my chest, I could sense that everybody could, like, see right through me. I was ashamed. I was hurt, wounded. Larry Crabb talks about the need for security and significance. And when your spouse leaves, your security is gone because you feel like nobody loves me. And my significance, I couldn't even keep my marriage together. That was the most important thing in my life. I couldn't even do that. Probably my relationship with my kids is hurt. My relationship with the church is hurt. And so because of that, there's so much missing. What divorce people seek to do is they just want to fill that hole. And so we fill the hole with, oh, I know, I'll find someone new. So we get another relationship. Or we fill it with chocolate. My favorite is like half gallon of ice cream. We fill it with alcohol, gambling, risk-taking. If you do counseling with divorced people, you constantly hear them talking about, well, I'm going to quit my job and join the CIA. You know,
I've seen a lot of bizarre behavior.
Exactly.
At that time. Even people who seem to be so strong and stable in their faith,
yeah,
just flip-flop completely.
Exactly. And I had clients who were counselors, psychologists, teachers, who were doing horrible things to their kids. And you're thinking, these are intelligent people. How can they do this?
I know.
They go through, and we talk in the seminar about going, it's like a period of temporary insanity. The way we get away with it is because everybody who's involved with Fresh Start has been through divorce. All of us, it's years later. But we get up there not as experts in terms of, I'm a psychologist and I know all about what you're going through, but I can say, hey, I've been there. And believe me, you go through a period of time where you can't be trusted to make proper decisions. Therefore, we say, you should not be making decisions on your own. You need some accountability. You need a support group. And for a counselor, I really stress the fact that counselors need to slow them down, give them a time frame, really help them in making some of the decisions, because chances are they're just going to want to fill that hole. There's something missing, and I just want to plug something or someone into that hole to make the pain go away.
Mm-hmm.
That feeling will last. The grieving process, research tells us, it lasts at least 2 years. And so we tell people, for at least 2 years, you need to put your life on hold. You're in intensive care. You should not be making major life changing decisions. Obviously, they may have to move because of the situation, but you really need some close accountability with some trusted Christian friends, some mature Christians who can kind of come alongside of you and help you from really going crazy during that time.
Sure thing. Tom, I was thinking about working with these couples or individuals in practice and in ministry roles. I'm reminded of what the old Paul Bohannon research about the six different types or stages of going through the divorce experience,
mm-hmm.
emotional, legal, economic, co-parental, community, and psychic divorce stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there's a lot of pain there. And as counselors, what are some of the key issues, and maybe you can give some practical guidelines right up front and initially working with someone coming through this experience?
Okay, we talk about the fact that first and foremost, it's going to take time. We stress that don't try to hurry the grief recovery process. People who try to hurry it, in other words, it's been 6 months, you should be over it by now.
Mm-hmm.
We know that it takes at least 2 years for people to grieve. In some of the research, you know, people were asked, you know, the death of a spouse, how long do you think it takes people to grieve? 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, or 2 years? And most people said 2 weeks, which tells us a little bit about our society. If you watch TV or if you see what goes on in the news media, you hear about, you know, so-and-so in Hollywood got a divorce, and a week later they're out again. And as, you know, we see that stuff, and consciously or unconsciously it affects us. We think, oh, I should be over it by now. I should be moving on with my life. And Christians sometimes reinforce that by, you know, you come to church and people say, you know, you just need to get on with your life. You know, just praise God and Jesus will be your husband and just get on with your life. And we go away thinking, well, gee, there must be something wrong with me. I know Jesus is my husband, but, you know, it doesn't feel very good when I'm laying in bed at night all by myself or I have these kids with no help. It's going to hurt. And as counselors, I think we need to validate the fact, not wallow in self-pity, and also not, you know, reinforcing you're a victim and allowing them to play the part of a victim, but saying, yes, it is going to hurt. And yes, I know that, you know, people don't understand. People say things that are hurtful. People who haven't been through it, you know, perhaps they're insensitive at times, but that's just part of it. So I think one of the practical things that we can do, and it seems so simple, but it's important that we say, yes, this will take time. And we need to know that, you know, the average grieving period for somebody go through a divorce, both children and adults, is at least 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that they're going to be miserable for 2 years. In other words, you know, that doesn't mean 2 years of depression, but it means going through all the stages of grieving, finally coming to a point where they say, you know, I'm a single mom, and that's okay. It's kind of like the Apostle Paul says, learning to be content in whatever stage I am. And I need to learn to be content as a single mom or as a single dad. Or, you know, I didn't want to be divorced, but it happened. And that doesn't mean, oh, great, I'm divorced, but that means that I've accepted it and I'm ready to move on with my life.
I was recently in a teaching experience where I asked the class, how many people in the room here know of someone close to you who is divorced? Nearly 100% of the class raised their hand.
Right.
Now, a lot of us think we know about the issues of divorce, Tom, and sometimes we make a lot of assumptions in working with those people. Take us into your research and ministry and behind the closed door, if you will. Let us know what you think are the most critical issues that surface that really need to be worked through.
For me, relational needs, the divorce, you know, everybody hears, oh, divorced people are all hot to trot. That's a stereotype, and that's offensive, obviously. And you know, none of the counselors would say that, but it could be a stereotype. what we see is they're wounded and vulnerable, and therefore they look like they're hot to trot. They're not out there, oh, I just need to find a man or I just need to find a woman. What they're saying is, I am so wounded, I need help. And their cry for help, they walk into a room, and even if it's a church meeting, and if you are vulnerable and wounded, there's two type of people who are going to be immediately attracted to you. A user and a caretaker. And probably as counselors, we're the caretakers. And mm-hmm. so we see somebody who's wounded and we want to go over and help. But also you have to recognize that there are people out there with radar who see that vulnerability and say, there's someone I can prey upon. Mm-hmm. And that may not be conscious, but it seems, you know, in our counseling, and I'm sure you've seen, over and over you see the wounded, divorced man or woman, and they start going to a church group. And why is it that the one louse in the room who's just out to use and abuse them, they seem to find them? And it's because they walk into the room, here their self-image is destroyed, they've got part of their self is missing, and they're just easy prey for somebody who wants to come along and use or abuse them. And I'm talking about sexually use them or take advantage of them. And they get themselves into these situations that only hurt them all the more. So, you know, first of all, they have tremendous relational needs. I encourage them to no romance. Mm-hmm. Stay away from dating for at least 2 years. No dating, no romance. What you need is honest friendship. You need somebody who can come alongside of you and just be your friend. And I will say, same sex. Now, they'll say, well, you know, I get along better with the opposite sex. And then I'll use the analogy. Well, if I told you that, you know, I just don't get along with English-speaking people. I get along, when I go over to France and somebody doesn't speak a word of English and I don't speak a word of French, I get along better with those people. Wouldn't you wonder about the depth of my relationship?
Yeah.
And then I'll say, you know, men and women speak very different languages, and it's very complex. And if you tell me that you don't get along with, you know, woman to woman or man to man, then I really question your ability to even know what a friendship is or what, you know, what it's like to have a relationship with somebody where you can share your life. So I encourage same-sex friendships, and that takes time to develop. I know for me, going through this, it was a long time before I found a soulmate, somebody, a guy who I could share my life with and know that he could, you know, handle that and accept me and share back. That took me a long time. These friendships don't develop overnight. So, I think it's important relationally that we stress, stay away from rebound relationships. Tim, I'll give you a statistic. People who get remarried within 2 years of their divorce have an 83% divorce rate.
Wow.
83% of those marriages end in divorce. For people who wait at least 2 years, they have about a 50-50 chance, which is the same as first-time marriages. And what that tells me is that, you know, and 2 years is not a magic formula, by the way. I mean, for some people, 3 years later, they're not ready.
Yeah.
And I'm sure for some people who get lots of help, or maybe it was, you know, the marriage was only 1 year, I'm sure that there might be a less period of time. But it seems like the more complicated the marriage, the more extended the legal battles, the problems with the kids, the custody, the more of that there is, the longer it takes to recover. And it tells me that within 2 years, you're just not ready. It also tells me we don't learn from our mistakes. A lot of divorced people will say, well, boy, I've learned my lesson.
Mm.
Now, the truth is, and let's go back to my story. You know, I said, oh, she, you know, this was her fault. She did this to me. I did nothing. It wasn't my fault. It wasn't until years later that I was able to identify that, now, wait a minute. My wife, my former wife, was involved with somebody else for a year before I even knew we had a problem.
Wow.
What did that say about my ability to be sensitive to her needs, what was going on in her life, the communication that was going on? And that wasn't until much later that I was even able to identify that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once I've identified that, how long then does it take me to undo whatever communication patterns I had that were not working?
Okay, Tom, hold that thought right there.
Thank you. We're back with our interview with Dr. Tom Whiteman. Tom, if you'll continue your thought, we'll keep going.
I was talking about we don't learn from our mistakes. We tend to repeat them. And I always talk to my clients about not only do we need to, first we have to work through our divorce recovery. In other words, I did not need to hear from a Christian counselor, Tom, you were a poor communicator. That's why your marriage fell apart. I didn't need to hear that in the first few sessions. I needed to just be able to talk about my feelings and feel like, okay, you understand me. Then you might have said, well, there's probably some issues we'll take a look at, but let's not deal with that right now. You know, let's just, work on getting you through the crisis, getting you over the emotional trauma. But at some point, we have to take the person back to, what did you contribute to the breakup of this marriage? And if they're still in the angry stage, you'll get, I did nothing, how can you say, you know, that you'll get all that anger. And then, you know, okay, I can back off of that, but I'm going to come back to that when you're ready. Because part of the challenge of Christian counseling, biblical counseling, is to be able to admonish people, to confront, but to do that, you know, speak the truth in love. Tom, you weren't a good communicator, but I need to tell you that in a loving way at a time when you can hear it. So let's just work through the emotions. Let me give you some support and encouragement. But at some point, we're going to have to take a look at this issue. Now, once we start looking at this issue, you know, Tom, if you ever in another relationship, male, female, or any relationship, you're going to have to learn different communication patterns. And, you know, looking back on it now, I wouldn't wish divorce on my worst enemy. But I wouldn't trade anything for what I've learned having gone through divorce. And if you've worked with divorced people, you probably never see anybody more motivated to say, you know, teach me something, tell me something. You know, everything I've ever believed in is falling apart, and I need help. So, you know, some of the practical things are this is a prime opportunity to make some changes. That's why we call it Fresh Start.
Yeah.
We, you know, if I'm going to get my marriage back, I don't want the same old marriage. I want a whole new marriage in terms of being reconciled. I don't want that same old marriage back. If I'm going to be reconciled to my spouse, we need a fresh start. On the other hand, if my marriage is never going to work out, if it's never going to come back together, I need a fresh start in terms of I've got to be able to move on with my life in a more Christ-like way.
Well, Tom, let's shift our focus now to the whole issue of children of divorce.
Okay. That's a safer topic, by the way, Tim. Yeah, because people
it
see
is.
The kids as they're truly the innocent victims.
Well, I sort of make a joke about this whole issue of divorce recovery. Everybody sort of hides behind titles like Single Again, Single Parenting,
right.
Which is, those are all easy
yeah.
ways to deal with the big D word.
Right.
But we know what we're faced with when we're in the counseling office or in the ministry office. Divorce is there, and it's just difficult to work with. And the effect of divorce we've seen all over the place.
Right.
There's no denying the fact that kids really suffer as a result of all of it. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you've learned and what are some of the short-term effects of divorce on kids?
Well, we know that kids go through the same stages of grieving as the parents do. You know, they go through the denial, oh, this can't be happening. They get angry. They feel a lot of guilt, particularly teenagers. I mean, they're big on anger. The younger kids feel a lot of guilt. It's very common for the young children to believe it was their fault. We spend a lot of time, we do have Fresh Start for Kids, by the way. A lot of the times we run Fresh Start for the adults, while down the hall or downstairs we're running a Fresh Start for Kids program. And one of the key elements of the program for the elementary school kids is divorce was not your fault. A lot of kids will remember, you know, I had a bad report card and mom and dad fought. And then I asked for a new bike, and they yelled and screamed. And when I went to bed, I could hear them fighting. And and then one day, Dad left, and they assume I must have done something. You know, maybe if I'd been a better boy, or maybe if I'd been a better girl, maybe if I'd been nicer to Daddy, he wouldn't have left me. So kids go through a lot of guilt, like it was my fault. And so we see them going through that, and then into depression, where they just feel like you know they're ashamed, they don't want to tell their friends, Children go through depression much different than adults. Adults can verbalize, I feel depressed. Kids can't verbalize that. But what you see is boys getting really antsy. They can't sit still. They're real distracted. They can't pay attention in class. Their grades go down. You know, perhaps if they're a toilet trained, they start having accidents again. Girls who tend to be a little more social, they may talk more, but still you'll see more isolation, withdrawal, maybe anger in boys or girls. But finally, over a period of 2 years, they may reach a point of acceptance, which is, this is now my family. You know, I live with my mom, I visit my dad every other weekend, and it's not my choice, but it's okay. You know, it's kind of neat. And you'll even hear the kids say, you know, I have two birthdays, or I have two Christmases. And they get over the shame, they get over the stigma, and they finally get to a point where this is my family and that's okay.
So how long do you think those effects really last then?
Again, it depends on the severity of the divorce. The typical divorce takes at least 2 to 3 years for kids to work through. They tend to take a little bit longer than the parents. And I believe, actually, Judy Wallerstein's research seems to indicate that you know, the healing of the kids is directly dependent on the healing of the parents. So in other words, if the parents aren't healed yet, mm-hmm. it's not likely that the kids are going to get over it.
Yeah, they keep sucking the kids right into it.
Right, they're coming back and saying, your father's no good or your mother's no good. So assuming that the parents are taking at least 2 years, then the kids are going to take that long and perhaps longer. However, if you throw in alcoholism, major moves and financial changes, in other words, we lived in an affluent area and now we're destitute, any kind of abuse or sexual abuse that was involved, any of those things can certainly extend it and greatly increase the impact on the kids. Usually, divorce doesn't happen in a vacuum. In other words, the family just doesn't divorce one day. Usually, there's been either drinking, drug abuse, there's been some verbal abuse, there's been some physical abuse, and certainly in the worst cases, we see sexual abuse. So in terms of how long does it take, I always look at, well, how many variables are we dealing with? Plus, I just got off the phone with a woman who 5 years later is still taking her ex back to court regularly, fighting over changing the custody arrangements. These kids are never going to get over it. And I said to her, I just got done saying, you know, your kids are never going to get over this until you stop the fighting. Let's put down the gloves and stop the fighting. But as long as parents will perpetuate this, then the kids are going to suffer. And I think as Christian counselors, and this is a tough issue, because I don't want to, you know, it's one thing to lessen the impact of divorce on people. In other words, there's natural consequences of divorce. There's going to be pain and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to divorce, let's try to do it in a godly way. Now that can be a real controversial statement in and of itself. But I'm talking about the kids now. Okay, you can't live with your spouse. I may not agree with that, but what about your kids? This is a huge investment. If I gave you $1 million and I said, you can have this $1 million, but the stipulation is you and your former spouse have to manage it together, I would be willing to bet you would find a way to work with that person to manage that $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
But your kids are worth much more than $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And how many times do parents say, we just can't talk, or we just can't agree, or I refuse to cooperate. Kids will always do better when both parents are involved in co-parenting. That's the rule. The exception to the rule, and this is the exception. Exception to the rule, there are times when a parent is so bad that the kids are just better off without that parent in their life. But that's the exception, and I think a lot of people come into the counseling office saying, well, I'm the exception. This man's a crazy man. This woman's, absolutely berserk. As counselors, we need to discern when is it the exception. Certainly an exception is when there's been sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
In such cases, I'll tell the man involved, the best thing you can do for your kids is to get help and to stay away. You can write to them, you can call them, but you need to stay out of their life until you can get yourself together. But again, that is the exception. For me, the rule is kids will always do better when they have both parents involved in their life, working together to co-parent for the good of the kids.
Well, dragging out the court issue and fighting each other constantly seems like one of the longer-term effects of divorce. Are there any other long-term effects of divorce on kids?
Yeah, again, in looking at, there's been a lot of research, most particularly Judith Wallerstein in her book, Second Chances, and there's been other research that it seems to indicate that divorce creates a lot of insecurity in kids. There is a third of the children of divorce who seem okay. In other words, they come out of it and the parents say, hey, my kids had no effect at all. But what we find later on is it does create a underneath insecurity where they're not as secure with their peers. They're not as secure in relationships. In girls in particular, we see a fear of relationship with the opposite sex, which may lead to one of two things. Either one, they get married too early because they just want to, you know, they haven't had a father figure, and so they meet a man who pays attention to them and they immediately want to get married. Or the other effect, which is I just don't trust men, and they delay marriage for a long period of time because they can never have that closeness because they don't really know how to relate to a man. For boys, we see a lot of chronic underachievement is the best way I would describe it.
Mm.
You know, they go to college and they can't pick a major, and so they drop out, and then they go to community college, and then they're not sure, and then maybe they join the military, but eventually they end up, you know, they're looking for a job, but they try this for a while and it just doesn't work out, and so then they go to, you know, a mechanic school, and I just see, you know, they just go through life just not feeling secure, always underestimating their potential and never, you know, you see these kids and they say, hey, they've got a lot of ability. They've got good intelligence, and yet they never seem to make it. You know, every job they've had, they've just kind of fluttered around. And so we do see a higher percentage of relationship problems with the girls and with the boys, this kind of chronic underachievement. I think both are symptoms of this underlying feeling of insecurity because I didn't come from a home where there was a security or perhaps the proper role models that, mm-hmm. that I needed. And that, by the way, is both mom and dad. I think a lot of times we assume, well, it's because the father is absent. But because father is absent, also we see mom in a much more vulnerable position. We see mom crying a lot, perhaps mom being very angry and very vulnerable. We see mom dating. We see mom making mistakes, you know, and on it goes. It's not just, you know, because dad's not there that this happens. I think there's an interplay between not having good role models, and many times that's both mom and dad.
Mm. Well, in working with these kids, Dom, or their parents, I guess, the next question would be, what kind of practical guidelines do you give to them?
Well, I a lot of times I hear, you know, the parents will call up, the mom will call up and say, well, I don't need counseling, but my kids do.
I've heard that a few times.
Yeah, and I'll say, well, you know, your kids' recovery, the best thing that you can do for your kids is get yourself healthy. Mm-hmm. Because the biggest predictor of the kids, you know, coming out of this okay is the parents', you know, emotional well-being.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, I want to make sure the custodial mom is working through her own issues. And then secondly, the most important person in their life is the non-custodial parent. If both of them are forgiving and healed and working together where they can at least talk to one another for the good of the kids, then I think that's gonna filter down to the kids working through it. So I think the first thing is I tell the parents, you need to get yourselves in a healthier place. I encourage parents to allow the kids to grieve. Don't force, throw away all the pictures. Don't ever speak to me about him again. You're not to bring up his name in this house. It's almost like you need to give the child permission to love the other parent, to say, yes, I can't be married to your father, but he's still your father, and you should show him respect. It's okay if, you know, remember the time we all went to Disney World. That's okay. Mm-hmm. And it might hurt mom to hear that. But I tell mom, you just need to bite your tongue and allow them to talk about that. Allow them to grieve or allow them to talk about what they're feeling and how they wish it could go back to the way it was. But then to speak the truth in love. Say, yes, I understand, Mom, have a situation. It's not your fault. To give them clear, honest information and to do it in a loving way.
Yeah.
Some parents will say, well, the truth is your father's an irresponsible jerk. That may be true, but it's not very loving. So
no,
instead, I say, speak the truth in love. Yes, I know your father loves you. I don't know why he didn't show up this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not because you're a bad kid. It has nothing to do with you. Your father's just going through a difficult time. It has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
See, that's a loving way to explain to a child why dad didn't show up for visitation.
What have you found to be some of the biggest mistakes parents make in working with their kids during this time?
By far the biggest mistake, and the kids say this over, I ask that question of the kids at our seminar, and it's resounding is bad-mouthing the ex.
Bad-mouthing
the ex. They constantly talk about, you know, your mother's no good, your father's no good. I think, particularly for Christians, we need to speak the truth in love. We need to be able to talk the truth, but in a very, to build up the other person, to say, yes, I couldn't be married to your father, but he's still your father. And encourage them to love the other parent. Don't badmouth your ex. Don't force loyalty choices. Here's the one that's an absolute no-no. Who do you want to spend Christmas with, your mother or me? There's a no-win. If I say, I want to spend Christmas with my mom, you're going to be mad at me. If I say to you, well, I want to spend Christmas with you, then I know you're going to get on the phone and tell mom, they don't want to be with you on Christmas, they want to be with me.
Mm-hmm.
I tell the parents, don't force loyalty choices. Don't get the kids involved in the battles. As adults, you need to make decisions and then communicate that lovingly to your kids well in advance. You know, I was in Philadelphia School District for 8 years as a school psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
I was amazed that, you know, just before Christmas break, I would talk, first of all, in Philadelphia School District, probably 80% of the kids came from single-parent homes.
Wow.
And I would ask the kids right before, a week before the holiday break and Christmas, what are you doing for Christmas? I was amazed how many kids said, oh, I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I know my dad wants to come out with me. I don't know what I'm doing. It would break my heart. I would get the parents on the phone. I'd say, You need to decide what you're going to do and tell the kids months in advance.
Yeah.
Here's what's going to happen. You're going to be with me on Christmas Eve, and then you're going to have a really good time. You're going to open your gifts, and then you're going to go over, and you're going to see your grandparents, and your mom's going to be there, and you're going to have another Christmas. Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
So I get to have a good time and not say, you know, well, who do you want to be with, your mom or me? Forcing kids to make choices, it can be devastating to the kids. It puts them in the middle.
Hey, Tom, staying on the kid theme then, what do you think are some of the most important factors in a child's healing?
I think some of the most important factors, we preach a lot about forgiveness. And I think the parents need to forgive each other. They need to get their life, in terms of accept God's forgiveness. In other words, maybe they haven't forgiven themselves. Maybe they've beaten themselves up over this. If kids see a mom who's never forgiven herself, a mom who's never forgiven the ex, or a dad who just kind of, you know, is always blaming others for where he is, a key issue is the parents learning to forgive. Forgive each other, forgive themselves, and walking with Christ. I mean, it seems, you know, maybe it's just a trite phrase, but, you know, I see parents who just have a Christ-like attitude even through the worst of times. They become role models for other people. I know when I go through a difficult time, I want to go to somebody who's been there, who says, yeah, I've been there, but yet, in spite of that, they're still rejoicing, praising God, and serving God. And when I'm going through a difficult time, I look up to a person like that. And kids are the same way. You know, they always will get angry, and, you know, mom's no good, and dad's no good. But over the years, I think all of kids, what really has an impact is, you know, my dad will always, no matter how my mom treated him, he was kind and gentle, and he never gave up. Even when I told my dad, go away and leave me alone, he continued to send me notes saying he loved me. He continued to call me. And one day your kids will say, you know, I'll never forget that. I tell that to dads who say, I have no impact on my kids.
Wow.
I give up. I tell them, don't ever give up. You continue to show love and Christ-like forgiveness to your ex. Because one day the kids will be able to look back on that. And that'll have a tremendous impact on their life.
Boy, that's a powerful statement. Seeing too many kids, Tom, suffer through this thing and feel so empty and alone and get alienated from one of the parents and never have contact again.
Yeah, I've said to many of my clients, some of the worst kids I've ever met have been children of divorce.
Wow.
But some of the best kids I've ever met have been children of divorce. Mm-hmm. And I really think, you know, you can take the divorce experience, and I tell my clients, you can either become bitter or better.
Yeah.
In other words, I've been through some horrible things, and maybe I was treated wrongly by people in the church, and maybe that Christian counselor didn't handle things the right way. And I could probably stew about that for the rest of my life and become a bitter old man. Or I could say, you know, Lord, I can take this and I can learn from it and I can use it in my life to help other people. And as Christian counselors, what an opportunity we have to really help people turn their lives around and say, you know, yeah, I certainly wouldn't wish this on you, but because it's happened, what can we learn from it? Mm-hmm. Where do we go from here? You know, I really believe that God allows us to go through things to teach us the most valuable lessons in life.
Well, Tom, as we move towards a close here, we have about 8 or 10 minutes yet. I wanted to bring up the topic of divorce mediation.
Okay.
It's been in the literature quite a bit. A lot of people talk about it. Maybe give us some of your perspectives on divorce mediation, what you've learned about it. Do you offer it to your clients? How do you feel about it?
We do offer, we actually have a divorce mediator that works in our office, and that was pretty controversial, I think, because we are a Christian counseling center. I know some churches view it as we're made here for people to get divorced. As a matter of fact, I find it's, if you can keep both parties talking to one another, you have a better chance of reconciliation. I find, and, you know, I put it down on the lawyers, but one little thing. I mean, they'll say, don't talk to each other, you know, just go through me. They have a vested interest in the adversarial model. The adversarial model being, you know, it's you against me, and they will say, I will get you the best deal, I will fight for you, while the other person, the other lawyer is telling the other party, I will fight for you, I will get you the best deal.
And they throw everybody into a panic.
Exactly.
They're going to lose kids, everything.
Right. And they make all kinds of promises. I can get you X number of dollars, just stick with me. And against Christian judgments, I mean, the Christians will come to me and say, well, gee, I thought everything was just going to be divided in half, but my lawyer tells me I can get more. And so 6 months later, when the money is all used up, finally the lawyers say, you know, you're just going to have to settle for half. And I have seen it happen too many times where I thought, you know, wouldn't it be better to just start off and say, hey, realistically, there are going to be no winners. Any lawyer that tells you I can help you win I would get a different lawyer. I tell people right off the bat, as a Christian counselor, I will tell you, no one will win. You will lose, your spouse will lose, and your kids will lose. So if you go into it realizing this is a no-win, how can we go through this with the least impact on us and our kids? In other words, the least detrimental impact. And I find that the least detrimental thing is, let's sit down together and work through this. Now, again, Christians would say, well, if you can sit down and talk, you should still be married. Well, and I see that point, and I have to admit, I still struggle with that. But I find that people who go the mediation route, it's better for the kids, it seems better for the individuals. There's a lot less arguing and screaming and vindictiveness and getting even and the vengeance that goes on. There's a lot less in that. And I can't help but think it's more Christ-like to go through this in a way that, you know, lessens the impact on the children in particular.
Tom, sort of, let's rehash a few things. I want to come back. After being through all that you've been through personally, learning what you've learned in your practice as a therapist, and knowing what you know about your commitment to Christ, God's Word, you know, everything through this, give us sort of a closing comment and speak to us as counselors, as pastors, as lay counselors out there who are helping others, I guess, about where you're at on marriage, first of all, and then this whole issue of divorced people.
Okay. I also head up or helped to head up the premarital program in our church. As I look at the divorce recovery ministry, I also realize we have to be doing more to prevent divorce. And so I wholeheartedly believe that we need to be involved in preparing couples for marriage. As Christian counselors, as pastors, we need to prepare people for marriage. And a lot of people say, well, how in the world can you be involved in premarital? I mean, aren't you divorced? And I get up there and I say, I was in premarital where I knew that we would be married forever and that God would bless our relationship, and it failed. And I need to forewarn you that it can happen to anyone. And so I try to change people's attitudes toward, you know, yes, right now I'm in love and we feel like it'll never happen to us, but it does. I mean, we have 14,000 alumni across the country who all probably would say, I thought it would never happen to me, and yet it did. There's some dangerous attitudes out there which are, well, as long as we're Christian, it'll never happen to us. Or as long as we continue going to church, it'll never happen to us. It can happen to anyone. And so I spend a lot of time in just preparing couples for marriage, the seriousness of the decision they're about to make, and then obviously do all I can to keep marriages together. I never want to see people end up in divorce, and yet it happens. And when it does happen, as I said in the beginning, I believe the church should be a place of healing, that somebody has to jump into the water and rescue the people who've gone off the cliff.
How do you deal with that reconciliation back to Christ? I mean, no doubt everybody goes through the struggle, like you were talking, of the alienation, anger, and all that kind of stuff, bringing them back before Him.
You know, one of the most helpful things that I found with divorced people that also worked for me, when we go to Christ, when we go to God, we can be assured that He knows exactly what we feel. He knows what it's like to be betrayed. He knows what it's like to be cheated on, to hear over and over again, yes, I'm sorry, and no change. Because He experienced that with His people, Israel, in the Scriptures. And one of the most healing things that really touched my heart was realizing that the way that people had treated me, or the rejection that I felt from people, was not God's heart. But God, in fact, knew exactly what I was going through. And even when I was mad at Him and I shook my fist at Him, God understood, and He was there with me through that time. You know, I look back on it now, and I can see, even when I felt God had abandoned me, He was with me the whole way. And what I try to explain to people is we do have a God who understands our pain and suffering, and He is right there in it with us, ready to help us and ready to help us to heal.
Well, Tom, listen, thank you so much for sharing part of your heart and ministry, and we really value your time and coming on here with us.
Well, thanks, Tim. I appreciate the opportunity to share.
And I want to thank you, listener, for staying with us through the tape, and hope you've enjoyed another edition of Council Tapes.
Thank you for listening. For more information about Dr. Whiteman and his work, or to order additional copies of this tape, please call our toll-free number 1-800-5-COUNSEL, or write to us at AACC, Post Office Box 739, Forest, Virginia, 24551.